Case this morning is Pinellas Energies against Ray and the Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. Ms. Klaus.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the Administrative Procedure Act demands reasoned decision-making. To comply, an administrative law judge must write a decision that makes sense. It must accurately and fairly review the evidence in the record, and the decision must rely on the actual evidence in the record. The judge may not substitute her or his personal opinion or personal view of the evidence, and she or he must write a decision that makes sense. This decision does not comply.
A personal view of the evidence could be a finding on credibility, which is a personal view because you do so impressionistically. I thought he was a lot more sensible than the other one.
That's right, except when the judge's view of the evidence is based on whether she agrees with the particular doctor as opposed to whether...
If whether she agrees with the doctor is based on a credibility finding, however, that's a different point of view.
Absolutely. And if we were here just to dispute the ALJ's credibility findings, we wouldn't be here at all. But that's not what this decision is about. And what this decision is about is the Benefits Review Board's either refusal to or just simply giving up on enforcing the Administrative Procedure Act, which forces us to come to this court to ask the court to ask the agency to comply and to remand this case. There are so many instances in which the ALJ's decision simply makes no sense, and in some respects it's just bizarre. And it starts with the ALJ's determination that the evidence in this case established a material change in Mr. Ray's condition between the denial of his first claim and his second claim. The ALJ relies on Dr. Myers' opinion. Dr. Myers, who, in the face of normal pulmonary function tests, normal arterial blood gas tests, good air exchange on physical examination, concluded with no explanation at all, and I'm going to quote what the doctor's conclusion was, that Ray, quote, that Ray's pneumoconiosis, quote, probably restricts somewhat arduous manual labor. Whatever that means, the ALJ interpreted this as a finding of total disability. It's not. And whatever the ALJ said with respect to whether this opinion is reasoned and documented, it's not. It's certainly not documented by anything in the doctor's opinion. His interpretation of the tests was that they were normal. He didn't review what the functional demands of this miner's coal mine employment was. He didn't explain what probably restricts somewhat arduous manual labor is. The ALJ
was... Wasn't his job the roof bolting job?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. That's not an easy job.
No, it's not. And he testified at the hearing and at his deposition what the job involved. And it involved lifting 15-pound roof bolts and inserting them using a hydraulic machine. He did have to bend, and that was hard. He said that was hard labor. Now, whether that's the equivalent of walking 1 to 2 blocks, climbing 1.5 to 2 flights of stairs, we don't know. We know it's lifting 15 pounds. We don't know from Dr. Myers' opinion, and no one can, what this miner was able to do at the time that Dr. Myers examined him, because he didn't say so. The ALJ relied on Dr. Sanjabi. Dr. Sanjabi was credited because he treated Ray. That's not a permissible reason. He was credited because he had expertise. The doctor's expertise isn't in the record. He was credited because his findings showed a change in condition. In 1980, Dr. Sanjabi said that Ray could climb 1 to 2 flights of stairs. In 1986, he said he could walk 1 to 1.5 blocks. That's not a change. That's what the court said in McNew, and it's the same situation, comparing apples to oranges. The judge said in 1986, Dr. Sanjabi definitively diagnosed pneumoconiosis, whereas in 1980, he had only said it was possible mild pneumoconiosis. That's not a change, because that's not the element of entitlement that precluded Ray's original claim. Same thing with Dr. Thompson. The ALJ relied on treatment. That's not a permissible reason. Dr. Thompson found more severe black lung disease. That's not a permissible reason. The presence or absence of black lung disease is not what precluded entitlement originally. And Dr. Thompson didn't contradict the others. Well, that doesn't make much sense, particularly since the ALJ admitted that he didn't assess Ray's functional ability to work. He relied on Dr. Rao. because Dr. Rao's opinion was consistent with Dr. Sanjabi. But, as the ALJ also acknowledges, Dr. Rao has no expertise, he did not assess Ray's ability to work, he didn't have a detailed work, family, medical, or smoking history, and Dr. Rao said that all these symptoms were present for 8 to 9 years. That's not the finding of a change. In contrast, with respect to Dr. Hauser, who could not have been clearer that this man had no functional impairment, the ALJ launched into a discourse about what the meaning of no is. Dr. Hauser's opinion, and I'm going to read...
But that was a presidential prerogative.
But at some point, you have to look at the evidence, and this is what Dr. Hauser said. Question. This is it in Employers Exhibit 17 at pages 26 to 28 and 32. Question. Would you say he, Ray, has any respiratory or pulmonary impairment? Answer. His function is essentially normal. Another question. Does he have any functional disability because of that condition? Dr. Hauser said he might have a mild, small airway obstruction. Answer, no. Question, would you say that Mr. Ray has any functional disability that is related to his occupational history of coal mine employment? Answer, no. Question, by normal pulmonary function, are you talking about measurable impairment? Answer, yes. How this judge could interpret this opinion as ambiguous is bizarre. And then we come
to that. Is functional disability a term of art in black lung cases?
Functional disability means the inability to perform the physical demands of the mind.
Is that a term of art in black lung cases?
No, at some point it's a common sense. It has a definition that...
Oh, well, then that could be a problem for you.
That's common sense?
That it's not a term of... No, not common sense, but term of art. Whether this is a term of art is a problem. So, I mean, in terms of how the ALJ looks at this... You know, I agree that the ALJ's opinion is not the clearest. I mean, it could certainly be a lot. He could improve greatly on his writing and his findings. But the term no functional disability is not a term of art in black lung cases. The doctor could have been referring to state law requirements.
It's not a term of art. It's a term of science. Doctors evaluate patients to determine whether they have functional impairments. The ALJ did focus on that, saying that it could be a state standard. But the fact is you have to read the doctor's opinion in light of the federal law. And the federal law says functional impairment is the inability to perform the miner's usual coal mine employment from a functional standpoint, from a physical exertional standpoint. This doctor's opinion is clear that he had no impairment for that work. It's not the inadvisability of returning to coal mine employment, it's functional impairment for work. And whether it's common sense or term of art or term of regulation, it all boils down to the same thing, and Dr. Hauser's opinion is no. He was not impaired, he was not disabled, he had normal pulmonary function. With respect to Dr. Tudor, too, the ALJ discredited Dr. Tudor's opinion because he was being a careful scientist, something this court's opinions reward, not punish. The same findings go with respect to the existence of pneumoconiosis and with respect to disability due to pneumoconiosis. The ALJ credits medical opinions that rely exclusively on discredited x-rays. Again, look at the doctor's opinions. Dr. Myers diagnosed pneumoconiosis category 2-1. That's an x-ray reading. And unless Dr. Myers had x-ray vision, nothing in his physical examination contributed to that diagnosis. Nothing in his test results did. The tests were normal. The physical examination showed good air exchange. The same thing with respect to Dr. Hauser. Dr. Hauser said, I diagnosed, and this is in his deposition, again, at page 23, that his diagnosis was based on the x-ray reading and history of exposure. History of exposure is not a reason to diagnose pneumoconiosis.
Going back to Dr. Tudor, the ALJ looked at his opinion, said it was inconsistent and poorly reasoned, and that he failed to account for Ray's limitations, and that the conclusion that he could return to coal mining work lacked reasonable rationale.
That's right. That's what the ALJ said. But what the doctor said is a completely different opinion. Dr. Tudor examined this miner twice. He was deposed 2 times. He reviewed all of the evidence in the record. He explained in detail the reasons and basis for his opinion. The judge found his opinion ambiguous because he was willing to say that coal dust exposure could have been a factor, but he explained why it was not. This goes to the point where the judge cannot mischaracterize the evidence or characterize the evidence to reach a result that she desires to reach. These aren't credibility findings. This is the judge substituting her opinion for the expert's. and it's simply not permissible. Finally, the judge engaged in no discussion with respect to the reason why Mr. Ray could not work, and that was because of his knee injuries, for which he filed a state claim and for which he received benefits. For all of these reasons, we ask the court, if not reverse, then at least remand this case for a decision by the agency that complies with the Administrative Procedure
Act. So it would go back for the fifth time?
Unfortunately, it would.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Fogel.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I think one of the important things about this case is the time period that this evidence was developed. Okay, this was back in the early 80s and mid 80s. This is when federal black lung law was pretty simple. Evidence development was simple. Decision making was simple. The kind of medical opinions that exist in this case are the types of medical opinions that were being developed back in the 80s. And I think that's why we have decisions like this court presented in the Cooper case, the Shonk case, the Poole case, and the Shelton case. And it all comes down to the ALJ has a certain responsibility and a duty to review that evidence and do her own comparisons, draw conclusions, and make inferences, and that's what was done in those cases. The evidence in those cases were developed about the same time that this case was. the medical evidence here has received microscopic review four times by two different ALJs and four times by the board. In the end, there's deference given to the ALJ's conclusions and inferences, and that should be upheld here.
There are nine judges still to go.
The first issue is material change. Now, the claimant still questions whether or not that's even a proper consideration in this case. But if it is, we have to remember that the ALJ relied on Dr. Meyer's opinion to find a material change in condition that he cannot return to work. Canellis Energies does not challenge the ALJ's reliance on Dr. Meyer's opinion to establish a material change. The only other opinion was the contrary opinion from Dr. Tudor on the material change issue. She discounted his opinion. Canellis Energies does not dispute the ALJ's finding on that point. So on this appeal, that finding should be affirmed. As far as the establishment of pneumoconiosis, we have a whole lot of opinions on that, most of them finding medical and or legal pneumoconiosis. The only one who didn't was Dr. Tudor. The ALJ explained her reasons for relying on the opinions that established pneumoconiosis and why she discredited Dr. Tudor's opinion. She considered all that relevant evidence. She carried out her duty, and that decision should be affirmed, which leaves only the causation issue. The ALJ again found that Dr. Meyer's opinion supports a finding of total disability due to co-worker's pneumoconiosis. Canellis Energies does not challenge that finding on appeal, and it should be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Fogel. Anything further, Ms. Glass?
The claimant's counsel essentially concedes that the evidence in the record is not good enough. It was not good enough in 1986, and it was not good enough now. The Cooper decision says quite clearly that a doctor's bare conclusion is not sufficient to establish anything. The court's repeated that admonition repeatedly, and most recently in the Villain case. It's not good enough. It was never good enough, no matter what else is in the record. Second, with respect to waiver, there was no waiver here. Canellis has challenged consistently and repeatedly the ALJ's reliance on Dr. Meyer's opinion. It has challenged repeatedly and consistently the ALJ's finding that there was a material change, that there was pneumoconiosis, that there was total disability, and that Mr. Ray's disability was due to pneumoconiosis. We respectfully request that the court remand.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel in this case. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.